This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Tom Aswell. His website is Louisiana Voice, Politics at its Worst. Tom Aswell will comment on the goings-on in Louisiana right now with Governor Jindal and David Vitter, the U.S. Senator, shopping for other offices, perhaps. And Tom Benson was a big winner in Super Bowl 47. We'll find out why from Tom Aswell. Also, Pearson Cross, political scientist at University of Louisiana Lafayette, on the political situation as Mary Landrieu, the senior U.S. Senator, seeks a fourth term next year, most likely. We'll talk with Pearson Cross, and we'll visit with Chuck Goodwin. He is the president of the Gridiron Club, which puts on the Bayou Bash, the 18th annual affair. Tomorrow's National Signing Day. LSU football expecting a big year. All this, now the news. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Thank you for joining us. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, Inkster Show at WRKF.org works if you're reaching us via email, or you may dial 877-217-5757. Our guest is Tom Aswell. He is the maestro of Louisiana Voice, politics at its worst, he calls it. Why is politics a dirty business, Tom Aswell?
Well, I guess you could say it's because it's Louisiana, but I think it crosses all lines. I think it's all states, so it's you can't limit it to Louisiana. But I try to limit my blog to Louisiana.
Well, I think Illinois has had more problems than we have as far as governors going to jail.
Yeah, yeah.
There have been other states with nefarious politicians. Imagine that.
Yep.
But Louisiana is always fertile for discussion when it comes to chicanery and just characters, downright characters. We have an ample supply of them, and one of them is Mr. Tom Aswell, who, in addition to being an intrepid journalist for many, many years, is also the author of Louisiana Rocks, The True Genesis of Rock and Roll. And each day he surveys the world, and today you have a big story on your website. What's going on?
Well, I learned it last night. I heard the rumor, and I got it confirmed this morning because I interviewed Mr. Ed Dreese, who is the CIO of the Office of Information Technology for the state of Louisiana, and that's the chief information officer, the CIO. He and three of his staff members have announced their resignations, effective April the 5th, and I'm told that the action was precipitated over their differences with the administration over Governor Jindal's layoff plans or plans to privatize the Office of Information Technology.
So was this a forced resignation?
That I don't know. From my interview with Mr. Dreese this morning, I don't believe it was. I believe that this was something that they decided to do.
Well, the governor has indicated he wants to privatize any number of things.
Everything.
Except the governor's office.
Correct.
But he's a man who has spent almost his entire life, his adult life, in public service, and a very noble calling, by the way. But it would seem this governor believes, based on his actions, which of course speak louder than words, based on his actions, he believes that private is better than public in just about every facet of life.
He seems to, and of course there are arguments on both sides of that issue. I happen to believe that there are some roles that private industry cannot do as well as government. There are some things that government has to do, education being one of them, infrastructure being another.
But to have disdain for the very government he serves. For example, we've had people call in on this show and call the president a socialist. I know some of these people. They work in state government. They take a government paycheck.
Yep.
So who's the socialist?
Right, right. And, well, I mean, that goes back to Mitt Romney's comment about the 47%. 47% of the people are on some type of federal paycheck. Well, I mean, you've got federal employees who are retired, military retirees. You have Social Security recipients, Medicare recipients. All of those take federal money, sure. But that doesn't mean that they're all deadbeats.
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I did.
What did you think?
Well, I hope my son-in-law is not listening. I think he had a few dollars on the 49ers, and I told him that the Ravens were going to win, and he kind of laughed in my face. And he gave me all the reasons why they were not. And I said, well, I'm still going with the upset special.
Well, I wish I'd gone to Las Vegas with you. I could have bet the house on the Ravens and
I don't pick upsets very often. I picked Alabama over Miami several years ago, and this is the first time I've picked an upset since then.
Well, Nate Silver, who has called the last two presidential elections very accurately, he picked the 49ers. And Nate said in the New York Times, he did so on Sunday. And the 49ers, who were 3.5-point favorites, got beat by 3 points by the Baltimore Ravens. But the Super Bowl drew 108 million viewers. It was widely watched, and there was more watching time because of the power outage. So this actually turned out to be a boon for CBS.
Right. Of course, yeah, it did. And that power outage, I don't know what caused that. Possibly it could have been Tom Benson sneaking off with his $5 million he got by virtue of the Super Bowl being played in New Orleans. That's one of the perks that the states gave Tom Benson.
Anytime he got $5 million.
Anytime the Super Bowl is played in New Orleans, he gets $5 million.
And not only that, doesn't he get the money that is earned in the game by the teams that are featured?
That, and he pays no rent on the Superdome for his games.
And here's a good question for you. The players get bonuses for winning the game and playing in the game.
Yes.
Those monies, I think, also belong to Mr. Tom Benson.
Well, at least the state income taxes that they pay on it goes to him. I have a letter here that I got as a result of a public records request. In the past 5 years, I believe it is, from 2005 through 2011, Tom Benson has received $10.4 million from the state, and that is money that visiting teams have paid in state income taxes. That money is paid into the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue immediately cuts a check to the Louisiana Stadium Exposition District, and LSED then cuts a check to Tom Benson.
What's that amount again, Tom?
$10.4
million. $10.4
million. Since 2005.
But here's a man who bought the Saints, I think, for around $60 million in 1985. The franchise is now worth $1 billion. $10.4 million is chump change for
Well, let's
Tom
not forget
Benson.
That the Superdome was named the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, and it's a public stadium. But Tom Benson gets the $20 million naming rights from Mercedes.
Well, they have not, they being the government, state government, has not announced how much that fee is. You're saying it's $20
million. $20 million.
How did you find out?
Well, it's been in the press. It's been widely reported.
Well, I haven't seen the amount. I haven't seen $20 million, but I'm hearing it from you, and you obviously are very confident in what you're saying.
Yes.
So, and that goes to Benson?
It goes to Tom Benson, not the state of Louisiana, even though it's a state-owned stadium.
Okay. Well, he's a good businessman.
He is.
Is there anything wrong with that? You got a problem with that, Tom?
Well, I got a problem with raping the citizens. Yes, citizens of Louisiana.
Come on.
Yeah,
rape's a strong word. That's not rape.
All right, let's go with extortion then.
Well, extortion's pretty strong too. He's just a good businessman.
He negotiated that as holding that sword over the state's head. He was going to pull a team out to San Antonio, and that's how he got these concessions. That, along with Champion Square and the Benson Towers.
But it's a beautiful building.
Yeah, and the state's paying premium dollar for it, too.
Okay. Well, Tom Benson did very well with Super Bowl 47. He's doing very well. At the age of 85, you got to give the man credit. He's always looking to do something new. Like, he bought the Hornets. He kept them in New Orleans.
The Hornets also get the same deal on the state income tax.
I'm sure they do.
They
Tom
do.
Benson's a good businessman.
Yeah.
So Tom Benson could give us all a few lessons.
That's the Pelicans now, by the way.
Yeah, well, I know. I know. He even changed the name, but arose by any other name.
Yes.
Right? Well, anyway, Tom Benson is a man who at 85 looks like he's got plenty of life left, and he has single-handedly kept the Saints and the Pelicans in New Orleans. So hats off to Tom Benson. And what's another $20 million for Mr. Benson? But that may be why that information has been squelched, the fact that it's Benson, not the state of Louisiana, if you are correct, who is benefiting from the Mercedes-Benz benevolence.
That's correct. And not to mention, he owns a couple of Mercedes-Benz dealerships in New Orleans,
Well,
too.
That was the connection.
That certainly didn't
hurt.
That
was the connection.
Yeah.
But here's a guy who started without a silver spoon. He was not born on third base.
This is true.
And he's done well. He's an American success story, and he's probably the richest man in Louisiana.
Probably so.
Probably so. And probably in the top five is a guy named John Georges. Now, I recently heard you refer to him as the Jethro Bodine of Louisiana. What do you mean?
Well, he's run for office. He's a Republican and ran for governor as an independent and ran for mayor of New Orleans as a Democrat. Is that what you told me?
That is correct.
And Jethro Bodine from the Beverly Hillbillies had a little problem deciding whether to be a brain surgeon or a short order cook or whatever.
A double knot spy.
Double knot spy, yes.
But John Georges may soon be a prominent publisher in this
Could
area.
Could be. I don't know if the Manship family is really ready to unload the Advocate or not, but it's a third generation ownership, and generally by the time you get that far down the line, somebody's ready to cash in.
And he may be running for governor in 2015, as will others, including David Bruce Vitter, the junior U.S. senator. It looks like he's going to run.
Looks like it. I'm a little perplexed. You don't often. It has been done, but you don't often see a senator run for governor. Congressman, yes, but not that often a senator.
Well, I think we need to be less cynical and give, and I'm sincere in saying this, Tom Benson his due as a businessman who has been brilliant at what he does. And here's David Vitter. This is a great story about redemption, isn't it?
Well, I suppose. I'm going to withhold...
Well, what do you think about his prospects of being the governor of Louisiana?
Well, at this point, looks very good because I don't see any really strong Democrat on the horizon to run against him, other than John Bell Edwards,
Georges, perhaps,
and possibly John Bell. I don't think has a name recognition at this point. He needs to get his face out there more and. Familiarize
he needs to get those old bumper stickers that said Governor Edwards and just recycle them.
Well, a new Edwards and a new Louisiana, perhaps.
That might work. The former Governor Edwards is getting ready for a reality show, which premieres March 13th. And to be a daddy at 86. Another great story about perseverance, resilience, a man who was 8.5 years in the slam, and he's out, and he's making babies.
Absolutely, apparently.
Well, but this is a wonderful story, isn't
yeah,
it? And
yeah.
The national media, it'll have a national audience. I suspect the governor's wife will be watched by
I wish him nothing but well.
I think he is a story that warrants attention, and he's getting an ample amount of it. 297-5633. We will go to the phone lines with Tom Aswell of Louisiana Voice. You've been doing this for how long, the Louisiana Voice?
Up on 3 years.
3 years. Mm-hmm. And you are known as kind of a modern-day muckraker.
Well, I'll accept that as a compliment, yes.
Yeah. Yes? So are you doing something that, say, the Times-Picayune, the Morning Advocate, Gannett News, these people who cover the governor on a daily basis are not doing?
Well, I don't want to put down other publications, but I do feel like I've come across some stories that they're not pursuing. One in particular is the story of Murphy Painter. I have reason to believe that Murphy Painter was actually set up on those sexual harassment charges. He has a trial coming up in April. 42 counts of computer fraud, but no charges of sexual harassment, stalking, or surveillance.
Well, we'll see what happens in the trial. There's a whole litany of allegations against Mr. Painter,
yes. And
we shall see what happens. But that's one, I think, for another day. But, Tom, you're on top of stories that others are not covering or shying away from. Why don't you start going to news conferences with the governor?
Why don't I?
Yeah.
When does he have a news conference?
Well, I think you should be there.
I should, yeah.
And start asking questions, like Jake Tapper asked President Obama, our guest yesterday,
well,
Jake
quite
Tapper.
Frankly, I don't get notification from the governor's office
well,
when they have a news
conference.
You ought
to just hang out at the Capitol,
yeah.
And when there's a news conference, Tom Aswell shows up. And what are they going to do?
Kick me out, probably. They've already tried.
We'll be back after this 90-second pause on WRKF with Tom Aswell. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757 is a number that works wherever you are. For Tom Aswell, native of Ruston. He's lived in Baton Rouge for 30 years, and he ran the Capital News Service for 10 years, covering state government for about 40 weekly and small daily newspapers throughout the state. And he, for the last 3 years, has been at the helm of a website about Louisiana politics called Louisiana Voice. Dan on Highway 61. Dan, good morning. You're on the air with Tom Aswell.
I had a question. When you mentioned the income tax payments kind of funneling back to Mr. Benson, it'd be interesting to know if we do away with the state income tax, of course, he would lose that revenue stream. What would be the net effect on him? Would he make so, would he benefit so much from not having to pay state and corporate income taxes himself that doing away with that revenue stream still makes it a net win for him?
That's a great question, and I've wondered that myself, and I haven't tried to delve into it yet. But that is an interesting question, because if the state income tax is abolished, then that is going to destroy that stream of income for him. And I feel like probably the $20 million for the naming of the Mercedes-Benz Superdome probably had something to do with that.
He would benefit some from an increase in sales tax.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he would benefit. No, I guess he would not. That would go to the state.
Yes.
But that is an interesting question. And of course, it affects all these tax breaks that are involved with, like, the film industry and other
and
industries.
As the caller said, Mr. Benson would benefit himself from the abolishment of the state income tax from a personal standpoint.
Well, for any money he earns in Louisiana.
Correct.
Yeah. Although, he may file his income taxes out of the great state of Texas.
Could be. And well, there's no state income tax in Texas anyway. So
I would imagine, yeah. Tom Benson, being the astute businessman that he is, files his taxes in Texas. 297-5633 for Tom Aswell, the master of Louisiana Voice, and a guy who has a voice about things that we don't often hear about. Listener Mary wants to know about another Mary, Mary Landrieu. What do you think about her next year running for re-election for a fourth term in the United States Senate?
Well, there's a lot of speculation that Jindal may run against her, and if he does not, I don't see anyone.
Do you really believe that?
I really don't. But, you know, a lot can happen. If he does not run against her, I really don't see anyone that can offer any real opposition.
Yeah, well, you don't think that Chaz Roemer or Bill Cassidy or John Fleming or one of those candidates would be
Bill Cassidy might be able to, but Bill Cassidy is known in Baton Rouge, and he's not known that much outside the Baton Rouge area.
But Mary Landrieu has had grueling elections in the past.
Yes, she has.
Woody Jenkins, Susie Terrell, and even John Kennedy was not a rout, remember?
Correct.
That was, by her standards, it was a landslide, but by Louisiana standards, for an incumbent to get less than 53% of the votes is not a landslide.
She is vulnerable. There's no question about it.
And with a Democratic president, I would think she might be more vulnerable.
Could be.
Because
she is the only statewide elected Democrat that we have.
Well, okay. Now, what's the rumor about you writing a book about Bobby Jindal? Is that...
It is a rumor at this point. I'm in negotiations with a publisher to write a book about the Jindal administration on the premise that if he does run for president, the book could have national implications. So,
do you have a working title?
I do not.
No?
No.
Any ideas?
Several.
Well, can you be fair?
Probably not.
Well, at least you admit it.
I have an agenda. I think any reporter does, if he were honest.
Chuck on Highway 61. Chuck, you're on the air with Tom Aswell. Good morning, Chuck.
Thank you, sir. I'm a retired state employee, as is my wife, and I cannot tell you how many of our ilk read your column for hope. I just wanted to say that I read your column recently and sent a letter in to the Advocate, and they discounted you emphatically, saying you are nothing more than a blog and therefore not a real news source. So apparently your name is known and honored even among the dishonest.
Well, I've also been called a non-legitimate reporter by a member of the administration. Last year when Governor Jindal was handing out his executive budget, I asked for a copy, and I was told I couldn't have one. Truth be known, I am a journalist. I still run Capital News Service, and I cover state government for about 30 newspapers statewide.
You're still doing that?
Yes, I am. I renewed the news service upon my retirement from the state, and I've been doing that about as long as I've been doing the blog.
So the people who claim you're not a journalist...
they have a right to say whatever they want, but well, I think my 30 newspapers might beg to differ with them.
Okay. So do you react to this kind of intimidation?
No.
No?
There's no reason to.
Well, maybe you react by, you said that you had an agenda. You may react in a way that they would not like.
The agenda is restricted exclusively to my blog. I don't let that spill over into my coverage from my newspapers. I think what I write speaks for itself. No one has been able to challenge me on my accuracy. If they can say what they want to about me.
Well, before we part company, I think the story that you mentioned as we started this morning warrants another hearing. You're saying some prominent members of the Jindal administration are stepping aside as of April 5th.
The director of the Office of Information Technology and three of his assistants, including two deputy commissioners, are resigning as of April the 5th. And the information that I have, their resignation comes about because of differences they have with the administration over the outsourcing of the Office of Information Technology.
Okay. John Sachs, listening online in Ruston, your old stomping grounds, he says to me, calling Tom Benson an American success story is like calling the robber barons of the 20th century great patriots.
John's a little outspoken. I've known John all my life. We were high school classmates and one of my best friends.
He says Tom Benson is not an admirable businessman. That's John Sachs.
That's John Sachs. Yeah.
Well, there's no doubt the man's had great success.
Yes.
And Tom Benson, I recall in 1985 when Edwin Edwards was searching for somebody to buy the Saints, Benson's the only guy who's... He's the only guy who came forward.
He's the only one that stepped up.
Without Tom Benson, we might not have the Saints. If we didn't have the Saints, Louisiana wouldn't have the Super Bowl. I think the man's done a lot of good for the state.
I can't argue that. And I just feel like the perks that this state has given him are just way, way over the line.
That's probably true, but can you blame Benson?
No, I don't blame Benson. If I were in his shoes, I'd probably take it.
Blame the state of Louisiana. Don't blame Tom Benson. Tom Benson's just trying to drive a good deal. That's what he does.
I haven't blamed Tom Benson.
but that's why I think he's an admirable businessman. Mm-hmm. He's just driving the best deal he can.
I agree.
By the way, no one's done a book on Benson. That might be a more interesting book than one on Bobby Jindal.
Could be.
So we've got a couple of projects for you, Tom.
I think one on Benson would be probably not of much interest outside the state of Louisiana.
Well, you might be right, but he's got quite a story to tell.
Yes, he does.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Let's do this again. You're fun. Tom
Thank you.
As well. Not to be confused with Tom Benson. 297-5633. We're joined now by Pearson Cross, the professor of political science at Louisiana Lafayette. Principal areas for Pearson Cross: Southern Louisiana politics, and good morning to you, Pearson Cross.
Good morning. How you doing?
Fine. And here's a man who received his BA from San Francisco State University and his PhD from Brandeis, and you ended up at the University of Louisiana Lafayette.
Just Providence. That's what I think.
Well, as we talked with Tom, Louisiana is a fun place to cover politics, isn't it?
Nothing better. It's always something going on.
Now, you're working on a book, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a book. I have a co-author. It's going to be about Jindal and the politics of education in the state. You know, it's going to principally focus on what, the historic legislative session last time around that created the vouchers and the increased charter schools and everything that's being shot down in court right now, pretty much.
Well, there seems to be a plethora of Jindal books in the works right now, and if he runs for president, there may be a market for this sort of thing.
That's right. Well, I think, Art, the story that I have a co-author, and I think the story that we're telling is a story, it's a story about Louisiana politics and about what it takes to do systemic reform in Louisiana, given the obstacles that are there, and how successful Jindal was and how astutely he, ran the table on the legislature and on certainly on the Democrats and some of the people, the teachers' unions and people that wanted to line up against him. And then I think there's an interesting story in to the extent to which, the Achilles heel of his methods are now biting him as these judges are saying, well, wait a minute, you can't do that with these funds. And then this upsets the racial balance in parishes or the DSEG orders. And, so things are coming back to haunt him that are a product of the method he chose.
Well, how will that play when he runs for president, Pearson? Is it a case in which he's going to say, I tried to do the right thing and the courts wouldn't let me do it? How's he going to frame this?
Well, he's going to frame it as a victory, certainly, that he took on, this speaks to his narrative of taking on established interests and doing something different. I mean, vouchers and increasing choice in public education is one of the things that people on the right, have been arguing for and trying to move towards as much as possible. And the fact that he really did institute, I mean, the numbers are very small, but the fact that he did institute, one of the very first statewide voucher programs in the country is going to, resonate with, voters who think that there should be more choice in education and that the educational establishment is, in fact, that a, sclerotic institution.
Mm-hmm. 297-5633 for Dr. Pearson Cross, assistant professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at the University of Louisiana, Lafayette. Now, in your bio, it says that you advise college Democrats. Is that
I do.
Right? Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
So are you a Democrat?
I am registered as a Democrat. That's right. And, I grew up in California, if you want to figure out where I'm coming from. I grew up in California, up right by San Francisco, and then moved to Boston. So both liberal Democratic hangouts. My parents were FDR Democrats. And so I've been a Democrat. I like to think of myself as kind of a Democrat with a populist Democrat with a small D, if you had to peg me. Mm-hmm. But I'm typically, on the side of, people. Normal people, people who work for a living, and frankly, people who are struggling to stay in the middle class, like professors like me all across Louisiana right now.
Are you saying Republicans might not have those same passions?
It depends who you talk to, and certainly Republicans have been very good. I mean, our own governor is very good at playing the populist card. I mean, he's kind of portraying himself as a populist Republican whose big vision is about increasing opportunity, responsibility comes along with it, but increasing opportunity for people, no matter who they are, where they come from, to succeed in America and getting government out of the way. So that's kind of a populist vision.
What did you think of Governor Jindal's address to the Republican National Committee in Charlotte?
I thought it was very interesting. He says, look, we're not going to win talking about government and, saying that we want to be the better managers of this government. We're going to win by staking out a new vision and a vision that catches fire with the people. And in that sense, I think he's right. Getting down into the details is not really going to pay off. By definition, there are a couple things here. One, he set out a vision that is profoundly non-conservative, for one thing. I mean, conservative in the old Burkean sense of, working from, venerable traditions and not changing very much and keeping things the way they are and the past is better. And he's explicitly repudiating all that. And he's saying, no, the bold new vision of conservatism is a really almost an anarchistic government. He, in fact, at one point said that and this is a direct quote, we would replace most of government's bureaucracy with a handful of good websites. You know, so that kind of vision that we don't really need government. Government gets in the way. It's a necessary evil. We need to unfetter the productive capacity of the American public. I mean, that's a strong, amazingly non-governmental vision. I mean, it's not necessarily a conservative vision. It may be a new conservative vision if you define the term differently.
But he is a man who has spent much of his life in government. He was head of the hospital system here in Louisiana, starting at the age of 24. Then he was head of the University of Louisiana system. Then he was a congressman and a governor. And in his 41 and a half years on the planet, of which, let's say, the last 20, he's been out of college, most of those have been spent as part of the government that is something that he is not embracing. Do you find that curious at all, Pearson?
Yeah, it's a staggeringly odd kind of way to think about government, as I'm kind of supervising and in charge of the thing that is not really important, and what's really important is something else. Now, he quite clearly says that what's important is improving economic opportunities. I mean, that's really the bottom line. That's the key to everything. And if you check out his governing in Louisiana, you'll see that that's really where it's at. What he is most excited about is bringing new companies to Louisiana, about increasing jobs in Louisiana, and about reducing the kinds of things that he thinks harm business.
All right, well, hold that thought. It seems that he is doing a good job in that respect as far as bringing companies to Louisiana. We have had some success in the last 5 years under Governor Jindal and Secretary Moray. Does he deserve plaudits for this?
Yes, absolutely. I would say so. Although, you know, some may quibble about the kind of jobs that he's actually bringing here. I mean, we're still focusing on what appears to us over in the university establishment as these kind of extractive industries, these manufacturing things, these, you know, kind of giant plant kind of things. I mean, I think that there's another growth model here that maybe we ought to be emulating. I mean, it strikes me that Jindal is winning the battle of the last century with that regard. When you look around the world and you say, what is America really going to be good at? Well, I think we're going to be good at stuff that's produced by brains, the kind of Massachusetts, Silicon Valley, Austin, Texas kind of let's get in there and do some innovation and create some new technologies. Instead, we're focusing on grabbing the remains of the old technologies that are flourishing elsewhere and promising them super good tax breaks and you know, lots of arable land and water to develop their industries here rather than elsewhere.
297-5633 is your number, or 877-217-5757. We'll take a short break and then return with the chair of the Department of Political Science at the University of Louisiana Lafayette, Dr. G. Pearson Cross, who is a graduate of San Francisco State and Brandeis, where he received his Ph.D., and he'll talk some more about Louisiana politics and some of the principal players, including Governor Bobby Jindal. Back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 for Dr. Pearson Cross, Department of Political Science Chair at UL Lafayette. Jim on I-10. Good morning, Jim. You're on the air.
Good morning. I had a question. When the governor said that they had to stop being the stupid party or something like that, it's a very strange thing to hear. Were they stupid for believing what they believed or just saying what they believed and letting the public know what they believed? And if they don't believe anymore what they did believe, what do they believe?
What do you think, Pearson?
Well, I think... You know, I think he, Bobby Jindal is trying to craft, I mean, part of this is about Bobby Jindal, obviously, and not about the, you know, the Republican Party message, although it's about that, too. And, you know, when Bobby Jindal says, we got to stop being the stupid party, I mean, Bobby Jindal's saying, look at me, I'm smart. You know, he's saying really two things. Basically, we've got to have solid proposals that treat people like, you know, that deal in the real world, that have bottom lines and so on, that, that people can take reasonably. But also, I'm the person to propose those. I think there's a real sense of I'm the smart person. I'm the one with the rep. You know, we need to quit being the party that, you know, can't shoot straight. We need to be the party of bold ideas that are articulated well.
There are some pundits who commented on the style of the governor, as they did back in 2009. He races through speeches. He delivers half-hour speeches, well, half-hour for him, which might be an hour and a half for somebody like me. does he have the ability to sway an audience?
Yes, I think generally speaking, a persuasive speaker. You know, I've heard him on a number of occasions, and you know, I think he does generally a good job. I haven't really had a problem with his speaking style, so I think he can be. You know, we don't really judge people by speaking styles so much. I think we do.
I think Ronald Reagan benefited from being a very good speaker, for example.
That's true. That is true. You know, he was the great communicator, and it is also true that Jindal really tanked it, you know, with his response to Obama around and really damaged his stock nationwide. But in terms of him speaking fast, it kind of goes along with who he is, I think. I think the problem with his Obama speech was always that his handlers told him to talk more slowly. And when he did so, I think it created a false speech kind of pattern that people interpreted as something else.
Well, I don't know that he can do much about his speaking pattern, but he could pause every now and then. He doesn't even pause for the applause lines.
Yeah, that's right. He plunges on ahead. He's got, but that could be, you know, young man in a hurry, you know, kind of a thing. As far as being the stupid party, I think it's really interesting, you know, the way these kind of idiots are thrown around, stupid idiots. You're hearing a lot of these kind of odd, crazy statements being described about people, you know, coming out. It's unclear. This kind of rhetoric doesn't get anybody anywhere, and I think that the only thing it shows is that there's a lot of second-guessing in the Republican Party about losing the 2012 election, which everybody thought was in the bag, pretty much.
Well, they thought it was in the bag, but President Obama got a big victory, over 51% of the votes. I've noted that the last century, only three presidents have received more than 51% twice, and they were named Franklin Roosevelt, Dwight Eisenhower, and Barack Obama. So President Obama, despite his intense opposition, he's a force to be reckoned with, and he's not a lightweight at all. There's no doubt that he has put himself among the head of the class when it comes to getting votes in the race for the highest office in the land.
Now, the real question is, following up on that, is can he craft a party that's going to be marked by his presence after he leaves? You know, he himself pointed to Ronald Reagan as kind of the person who had really shaped politics. Bill Clinton, you know, regardless of how you feel about him, didn't leave having left a governing style or a molded together a majority of voters who were kind of Clinton voters. Question is Obama going to do any better in that regard?
Well, Clinton was immersed in scandal in his second term, and if Obama is, I would imagine he'll have some of the same issues with Clinton or that Clinton had. And remember, Al Gore didn't even want Clinton on the campaign trail for him in 2000.
Yeah, although probably that was a mistake, at some point now revealed, of course, but yeah.
Right. Now, Jindal, our governor, Bobby Jindal, has some major things going on with this tax proposal. What do you think about his capacity to make this transition from income taxes to sales taxes? Is that something that's palatable to the legislature and to the people?
I think it's very palatable to the legislature. I don't know about the people. This is an awfully big, awfully big kind of bite to be doing. We haven't really seen much of the details yet. The problem with it, it's structurally flawed. And that is because our income in this state is already very much handicapped. We don't have, the states that don't have an income tax have property taxes or other taxes that compensate for it. So we're taking away, you know, we got sales tax and income tax, and those are like the two legs that we're standing on. If we take away one of those legs, we're going to make ourselves, you know, and put everything on the sales tax, it's going to make us a really unbalanced state in terms of revenue. It's going to be a very hard thing to do, I think, when they start looking at the numbers.
And another aspect of this that is getting some publicity now is the governor's apparent U-turn on the tobacco tax. How can he go back on something that he has been steadfastly against? Any increase in new taxes at all?
Yeah. Well, you know, he can do it if it suits him. I mean, you know, he's grabbed the momentum here. You know, people were talking, and remember, I'm kind of viewing this these tax proposals in a couple of categories. One, he came out with that mid-year tax cut that we were going to have to do that adjustment, and that caused a lot of pain. Remember, hospice patients weren't going to be paid for, women's shelters are not going to be have their funding cut, and so there's some real pain there. And then all of a sudden the dialogue changes because he comes out with this huge let's just get rid of income tax, so that changes the dialogue. So on tobacco taxes and that turnaround, you know, it's all how you phrase it. Obviously, if he can say, look, of course I maybe raised tobacco taxes, but I eliminated income taxes in Louisiana, I think that keeps him in pretty good stead with the people who care about that sort of thing.
You think there will be any momentum for a change on gun rights in America?
Well, there's momentum, but it's not going to happen in this state. I don't think an assault weapons ban is going to get through the House. They're going to do something around the edges. They may do something on mental health care. We're going to have a problem doing anything with mental health here because that's one of the areas that we're cutting funding on all the time. So I'm just not sure how we're going to respond in our state.
Well, Pearson Cross, we thank you for joining us today, and certainly we'll call on you again, a man of many interests who came this way from other parts of the United States. Understand you're quite a jazz pianist.
Well, that's awfully kind. I've been playing piano. My mother was a piano teacher, and I've been playing since I was 8, and I take it very seriously, and I really, really enjoy it.
Well, you're in the right part of the country for this.
That's absolutely right. It's been fun. I've been learning stuff since I've been in Louisiana.
And when is the book coming?
You know, hoping to have a completed manuscript by September 1.
Okay. And this one will be about Governor Bobby Jindal.
Governor Jindal and education reform in Louisiana.
Well, very good. Thank you, Pearson. Good to visit with you as always.
Thanks. Good to visit with you, Jim.
Bye-bye. 297-5633, 877-217-5757. We are joined now by Chuck Goodwin. He is president of the Gridiron Club at LSU, and tomorrow is the big day for his organization. He is the chair of the Bayou Bash, the 18th annual one, and it's an event that has taken a life of its own at the River Center tomorrow, as it has been. Good morning to you, Chuck Goodwin.
Good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Chuck. Now, Jerry DiNardo is the one who actually started this event, correct? The former
back
coach?
1996.
Okay. Kevin, I think we're going to have to get a better line for Chuck, but Jerry DiNardo started this, as Chuck said, in 1996, and so this is 18 years, and Jerry DiNardo, who came to LSU after Curly Hallman and Mike Archer had 6 straight losing seasons, he led LSU to victorious seasons in 95, 96, and 97, and then had losing campaigns in 98 and 99, and that resulted in the hiring of one Nick Saban, who led LSU to the national championship in 2003. This is 10 years now since that first title from Nick Saban, the BCS glory in New Orleans, and that was followed 4 years later by another BCS title by Les Miles, who's starting his 8th season. He's expected to have an outstanding recruiting class coming off a disappointing year. In the old days, a 10-3 season would be considered impressive. This time around, Les Miles is facing some criticism, although he did get a substantial pay raise and a contract extension, 7 years, $4.3 million a season. That's what the LSU Board of Supervisors voted Friday to give Coach Les Miles, who was always a feature at some point at Bayou Bash. And tomorrow, Chuck, I understand that Coach Miles will be at the event, as he has been. And based on what is expected, he's expected to have a very good recruiting class.
Yes, Jim, he'll be here at about 5 o'clock to discuss the recruiting class and go over all the players and the state of the program. And that's the culmination of the event. That's the final stage. The other day, we'll have other speakers on the stage, and we'll have videos, and we have a silent auction that goes all day. So it's a fun day.
Well, Les Miles, I was surprised to see at the Superdome. I wasn't at the game, but I saw him on television. He was in the box with the father of the two coaches. I didn't realize it, but the elder Coach Harbaugh was an assistant coach at Michigan when Les Miles was a player there.
Oh, yeah, I saw that also, and I didn't realize that either. So, interesting.
Well, this
a lot of things you don't know about this coach, huh?
the River Center will be filled to the rafters tomorrow. Now, people are invited to attend, but do you get a point where you have to turn people away, Chuck?
We've never had to turn anybody away. We have a large enough room. I mean, we've got 70,000 square feet, so we have plenty of room for people.
So you're inviting all comers then?
All comers. You can get your tickets through Ticketmaster, $30 in advance. It'd be $45 at the door. So we'd love to have everybody come down.
All right, AJ and Walker. Hi, AJ. You're on with Chuck Goodwin.
Hello, Chuck.
Hello.
Got a statement, I guess, maybe a question. I had the pleasure of going to Atlanta for the Chick-fil-A Bowl. Of course, the best thing about the trip was bringing in the new year in Atlanta. Had some Clemson people sitting next to us, and in about midway to the fourth quarter, one of them turned around. We were, you know, talking the whole time, and turned around and said, "What happened to your number 33? Is he injured?" Of course, that's Hill, Jeremy Hill, who was averaging about 10 yards a play. Les just does some things at times in some games that just, you know, you look and say, what in the world is happening? And I think we're getting the reputation of being the Philip Fulmer, the new Philip Fulmer of Southeastern Conference.
I hope that's not true, because last year we were in a national championship game, and Philip Fulmer only made it there once.
Well, you know what he's saying, though. He's saying LSU is winning at a certain level, but since 2007 hasn't crossed the threshold to the championship, and there can be only one champion. Unfortunately for Les Miles, the guy who's picking up all the titles of late is his predecessor, Nick Saban. That makes it difficult for him, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does. But we got a good class coming in, and I think you'll see some changes coming in with the coming year. I think we're going to do good.
Nine different states are expected to be represented by LSU signing class tomorrow. The Tigers now are a nationwide recruiting force, and that probably is related to all the exposure LSU gets on a national basis.
Absolutely, it is. We get, you know, recruiting. There was an article in the paper the other day that said, you know, LSU doesn't have to make a name for itself anymore in the far reaches of the country. We get players from all over the country.
Well, Chuck Goodwin, you're president of the Gridiron Club. How many members are there in your club?
There's about 450 members in the Gridiron Club. I'm not president. I'm the chairman of the Bayou Bash.
All right.
I'm a past president.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. Who is the president now?
Buddy Bro is the president this year.
All right. But Chuck's past president, chair of the Bayou Bash. The
18th year.
Eighth year for you and 18th Bayou Bash. And you've had a pretty good 8 years, but it's Les Miles' eighth year as well.
That's
so you came in together.
That's correct. He had one before me, so that's right. 8 years, that's right.
Well,
we've done well together.
Yeah, I would say so. But you know how emotional people get. They get as emotional when LSU gets a recruit unexpectedly or loses one as they do when Alabama scores in the closing minute.
Yeah, that's true, Jim. We had last year had those surprises at the last minute, and that wasn't very good. But we had some good recruits. You know, it's just recruiting's not a science. It's a exact science. It's a judgment call, and you just never know.
But I think you would acknowledge, Chuck. You see it. The passion is there just as intensely, maybe even more so at times, as it is for the games.
Absolutely. You know, you sit here and watch the people when we announce a recruit, and there's a lot of passion there. Yes. And that's what makes the day fun, and hopefully we'll have some good surprises tomorrow.
Well, good luck to you, Chuck. What time you get started?
Doors open at 8:30 in the morning.
8:30 in the morning. Goodness.
We're down here setting up today.
So. Well, good luck, and let's talk soon. Take care.
Thanks, Jim.
Chuck Goodwin, the chair of the 18th Annual Bayou Bash at the River Center tomorrow, which is National Signing Day. Until tomorrow, for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.